This is Renovating Masculinity. To become authentic, great men, we must intentionally build ourselves to be a place of safety and protection for others.
Each week, JT, Anthony, and myself, Chris, will challenge you to rethink old habits so you can remove thoughts that hinder you and replace them with actions that strengthen you as a man.
So let's get to work.
You're waiting.
Good morning, gentlemen.
You're waiting for me to say it, aren't you? You're looking at me.
I was trying to say it at the same time. Good morning, gentlemen.
How are you doing today, Anthony?
I'm real good.
Are you off today? Or you got to go into work later?
No, I'm going later.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you're about to go on vacation, aren't you?
Dude, don't bring it up. I told you already, I'm having a hard time focusing.
That's why I brought it up.
I'm like walking around.
Already checked out.
Yeah, and I'm wiggling my toes and my shoes like I'm on the beach, bro. And I'm looking out of the window like I'm looking at the ocean. People are asking for stuff and guests are trying to talk to me. And I'm just like totally checked out.
And you're sipping a pina colada.
Yeah, I'm like, bring me a drink. What are you talking about?
But let me save you. You're not totally checked out.
What was that about your boss listens to this sometimes?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to help you with here. So last episode, we made a statement that we talked about afterward, after the mics were off, about failure is only feedback.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that all of us have had failures in our life that we look back and go, man, that feedback was pretty harsh.
How hard was it for you, JT, not to look at me and go, and I'm sure that Anthony has a bunch of failures that he wants to talk about? I noticed that you looked,
yeah,
but you resisted saying it.
Well, remember I said share some, save some?
Oh.
Yeah, so it was in there, but coming. I saved it. And so I just made a general statement.
Oh my goodness.
My position here is comedic foil.
Comedic foil. Because I know Chris's failures too. So, I mean, he's failed a lot too.
Let's get into those.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an interesting subject.
Hey, I'll lead off with something I've been thinking about. Because I want to hear more of y'all's experiences, because you guys actually lead people. I have, very, very eagerly and loudly explain that I don't have positions or titles. So I just love looking and watching leaders and how they lead and taking notes. So I do want to hear some of more when it's not gone well, or what's kind of, you know, things that you guys can look back on. But so I'll preface with this little story quick and then see what it pulls out of you. My wife is one of the best. She is incredible at asking good questions. And I did not realize that when I fell in love with her and wanted to marry her, but I've grown to just admire and absolutely love how great she is at asking questions and an active listener. She's just incredible at it. So I'm always learning from her in that realm. And one time we came out of couples therapy, it was probably 2 years ago now. And it was a good session. It was not one of the really hard and loud sessions. It was a great one. And we were just kind of unpacking some of the stuff that we had discussed, and mostly about communication and how I need to be better. Especially back then, I was figuring out how to control getting heated about stuff that really neither of us were heated about, but I would get louder, you know? Yeah, I'm sure no one can relate to that. But
not me.
She had this just kind of out of the blue. We're just talking and neither of us are triggered or upset at all. And she was like, you know, why do you have such a problem with authority? And I kind of paused and I was like, well, I literally don't even know how to answer that question. I don't think of myself as having a problem with authority, first of all. But yeah, I don't really like authority. I don't really respect most people in authority over me. And so it just got me going and spinning and I literally looked at her and kind of chuckled, like, I don't really even know what that question means, let alone how to discuss it or answer it. So I have continually unpacked that for over 2 years now of what my issues with authority are or why. But I would love to hear and I can ramble on that for a while, but I'd love to hear what y'all, because JT, you've talked about how you don't want to be controlled, mm-hmm, and are very quick to know that about yourself. I had to figure out my own version of that, which wasn't that. It was far more about, I haven't seen great leadership embodied around me or above me through my younger years and through young adulthood. So I'm kind of, I don't realize until she asked me that question, I hadn't really acknowledged how much of a chip on I take is like, I'll be quiet. I'm not trying to like yell at everybody who's in position over me, but internally, I do not respect them. And she sees those parts, but she's one of the only ones. I'm real good at keeping the right face on.
Yeah.
So it got me going internally looking at like, so I'm curious what those pieces have looked like with y'all where you can acknowledge, huh, what's the reason why I guard that or why I don't want to be under somebody else or why I don't want to listen to them, but I'll keep a nice face or, you know.
Well, Chris, don't run away from it though, because what you said, man, is important for us to make sure it's clear. She asked you a question and you didn't have an answer, but literally you just gave a great description to how a lot of staff and a lot of people that are being led feel about their bosses. And JT talks about, you know, bringing luggage into one new relationship from an old relationship. But you said something about you hadn't seen a great example of what?
Of good leadership.
Yeah. And that's something, man, that as a leader, you're always wondering about.
Or maybe I should say healthy. Maybe. Healthy. Yeah. I mean, I think good is that's a weird term to use.
Yeah. But we're always wondering about that. And, you know, as leaders look to leaders, and then you hate for somebody to come talk about, you know, my ex-boss was great. You know, they were this. And the only thing you can hear is, I suck. Yeah. And then it confirms something in you where you're like, yeah, I knew I sucked. And now they're comparing me to Mr. Nice Guy.
Yeah.
And it really does a number on you. But, you know, failures, JT, what's the word? Failure is feedback?
Failure is feedback.
Yeah. Because I've had a lot of feedback in kind of the realm of learning how to lead. And I haven't had, you know, any classes. I haven't had people really come around me and go, hey, this is how you lead. Literally all of my leadership skills have been gathered through failures, 100% of them. And it's not good. You know, like I alluded to, there's some times in my life that I've led in some ways that were not savory. I'll just say it that way. And, you know, I took all of those talents out.
That is funny.
Yeah.
Savory.
Wasn't that unique, the way that I put that?
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's kind of like in the industry. If we see something that's good, we go, it's sexy. That plate is sexy right there. I'm just trying to let you into my world. You don't have to look at me like I'm crazy.
It's teaching us. It's teaching us.
Dude.
I've never looked at a plate and went, that is sexy.
You haven't seen the right plate.
Oh, well, there you have that.
Yeah. But, you know, so these moments, they come out of times when I've failed in big ways and small ways. But I remember kind of being in my first leadership role and just having a staff member cry. Oof. Like, dude, I mean, just, it's one thing if you say something and your intention is to make them cry. But when you're saying something that you think that might be helpful or just even you didn't even think about what you said. You just said something that was so brutally honest or so, you know, on point, or maybe it hit a place in them that they cry. I mean, that will make you really think about what a horrible boss you are. I mean, to see someone in the middle of a shift and they cry. And it's even worse that the first time that happened to me, it was a female. Because believe it or not, I've said some things to some men that are under my authority that they cried. And when I think about that, man, I'm like, dude, we wield and hold so much authority and power. And there is this expectation for people that are under us to be appreciated by us, to be respected by us. But when we look in on them, just like a father and a son, they're going, man, I hope he realizes how much I care. I hope he understands how hard I'm trying. And then as leaders, man, we can be so wound up in what we're trying to do and where we're trying to get a staff that we can forget that this staff, this big staff that we look at, is made out of individual people. So I think one of my major fails was forgetting that everybody can't be led the same way.
Yeah.
There's some people that you can be brutally honest to. There's some people that you have to go around three corners to actually walk across the street. I mean, there's just different ways that you have to manage people. And the fun thing about being a boss is that that is incredibly challenging. And when you are able to accomplish it, man, you do walk away from some of those situations and go, man, I actually did good. I have this person understanding what I need, and I did it in a way that didn't tear this person down. And then even as a boss, I've told you this, JT, man, and I told you too, Chris, just recently, you know, there's this perception that bosses, when you have to part ways with somebody and you have to fire them, that especially if it's a bad employee or people that everybody around you perceives as not doing their job, or they're always late, or they have a bad attitude and all those kinds of things, and you go and you have to fire them, everybody thinks that you're like, yeah, I did that.
Mm-hmm. That must have felt good. Mm-hmm. That must have been fun.
And just for everybody out there, like, man, I have never sat down and had to terminate somebody's employment, and I got up from the table and was like, that was awesome. I have never done it, no matter how they behave, no matter how much they might have deserved it. And I do this thing, man. I always tell people that if it ever comes to a place that we have to part ways, I'm going to make sure that I've given you so many opportunities, so many vivid moments that you can mark back to correct a thing, that there won't be any doubt in your mind that I've given you these opportunities. And what's so funny, man, my life is weird, man. People will come back and talk to me. I cannot count the number of times that I've had to fire somebody and people will come back and go, man, I just want to tell you that the way that you fired me really set a mark in my heart. Like, you could have said some things to me during that time when you fired me that could have really torn me down. But the way that you let me go caused me to go to my next job and be better. Because people talk about exit interviews. Normally that's when somebody quits and they tell you what's wrong with you.
Right.
But when you sit down and fire people sometimes, I think it's so important, man, to go, hey, look, you're going to keep running into this thing. You're going to keep dealing with it. Other leaders are going to perceive it in you, and it may result in the same way. If you do this one thing, or this two things or five things, I think that it would really help you out. But, you know, there's times too that, like it or not, I mean, you look at somebody in the middle of the shift and go, get out of my restaurant. And that thing really breeds something in your staff too, because they go, I have no job security.
Anthony
might just look at me out of QC, that's where we sell the food, and go, get out of my restaurant. And that happened only once. It only took one time for me to turn around and see everybody looking at me and the insecurity that they felt. To go, maybe that's not a good thing to do. But again, man, I can write a book and talk this whole podcast about the moments that I failed. But I don't want leaders to get so wound up into the possibility that they may fail in the way that they lead, that they refuse to lead. Because that's another really frustrating thing for your staff, when they have a leader around, but they're running and doing their own thing, and nobody will check mark or stop or encourage or condone. They won't do anything, and that's another fail. They just kind of sit back and allow the staff to be who they want to be. And you can't lead a company like you can't lead anything really like that. You have to be willing to say something and have the entire company mad at you because you know it's the right thing. Or you can bend to that pressure and refuse to say a thing because you want to keep everybody happy.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, for me, it started pretty early. I mean, I owned my own business when I was 21.
Jeez.
And it was given to me. It was already an established kind of business. And so it was given to me. So at a young age, I felt that I had to be this enforcer in order for people to listen to me. Cause I was the youngest. So I had guys in their, you know, 30s and 40s and 50s that were working for me.
For you. Yeah.
And so I had this kind of tyrant kind of attitude. The problem with that is, as I grew older, I didn't change that because it had worked for me. Perceivedly, it had worked for me. I didn't know behind my back, nobody really liked working with me.
From that current level of awareness that you had.
It was, and I was very, very positional because I'm the owner. You're going to do it like I want it done.
Yeah.
And you may be the expert. I don't care.
Huh.
You're going to do it the way that I want it done. And I know y'all find this hard to believe. But I took that into even my 30, you know, just where I was I would say a tyrant. Angry. I came across angry all the time because I felt I had to bow up on everybody for them to listen to me. And I just never got out of that habit. And I remember one time in a house, you know, I'd moved up to, I was building multi-million dollar stuff. And my electrician of all people came to me and talking about few words, but impactful. He said, you know what? If you are angry all the time, nobody takes you serious.
Huh.
And man, it just really like, you know, of course I said, shut up, you know, get back to work, you know, but afterward, it really did have a huge impact on me that I'm leading out of position. And I didn't have these terms back then.
Okay, yeah,
I got
sure.
these terms now, but I was leading out of position and out of insecurity more than I was out of wanting to see even a good product or even, you know, relying on people who were way more experienced than me, empower them to do
right.
what they should be doing. And that was really a pivotal moment for me. I mean, just think of an electrician
calling
and,
you out.
And my name is on the sign. So, hey, look, this is all my money and this is, you know, you're not telling me anything to do. But it really did. That was a pivotal point for me to change the way that I think about leadership. And I actually became calm after that. And what I realized was when I needed to be a little bit more forceful, people took me seriously.
Yeah.
Which is what I was wanting in the first place. Mm-hmm. I wanted people to take me seriously because I didn't feel like they would because of my age.
He was an older guy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
How do you feel about the fact that he told you that, like, looking back now?
Funny, if I were to do a job right now, he'd still be my electrician.
Still calling.
That's great. That's
and not
great.
Because he was just good at what he did, but how he was not afraid to say something to me in a respectful, he didn't come at me mad and mean like I was. He showed me the opposite of how you can impact people being very calm. Mm. So that was really the first. And then there's been several since then, you know, that I've really learned from. But yeah, that was a big one. And again, just because of my age, the insecurity, positional leadership, you know, all that, man, I could just see the fruit of it.
Yeah.
I say all the time, you know, oh, you've just planted seeds. Now you're eating the fruit and you don't like the taste of it. Well, guess what? You got to plant different seeds.
Yeah,
so
man.
I started planting a different way of leading.
Yeah.
And it took a look, it took years. It's not, this is not the following week that I changed.
So how about this? What about how you define, or both of you, I'll ask Anthony first, but looking at that, because I hear that story and that I hear the word ego and pride.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But what is the difference between, how do you start to sift through, if I'm trying to look at myself and going, okay, am I blinded to that? Am I being blind to my own ego or pride? Because I'm not angry all the time, but what does that look like in my world? How do you separate that from confident leading where you know you need to charge when you're saying you got to tell the whole company, even if it makes people mad? But then the flip side of that is you're yelling and barking orders just to yell and bark orders. How do you start to sift through the real motives of that in your style or in your, you know, because some of that, when you're 20 something and you're running a company and you got all these elders running under you, well, shoot, you got to have a big old chest to be, you know, there's some of that. You got to have a swagger to you to walk through that confidently.
Yeah.
How do you start to call out, ooh, this part of me is confident in a good way. That part of me is insecure. Like,
yeah.
And he said his wife asked good questions.
Yeah.
He's taking lessons from her.
No doubt.
I'm learning.
I'm ready for a restroom break, man. I'm like, jeez. But just, that's great. That's a great question, man. I guess, I don't know. I think it goes back to blooper reels and realizing that what you've done in the past didn't work. But how do you navigate between having the confidence to lead and being a tyrant and controlling the staff? I know a couple of traits in myself that are natural proclivities. Mm. Like, I can get very animated, and that animation walks me into anger. And anger has a way of settling things down around you when they're going out of control. Huh. And if you get trapped in that place, man, where you allow anger to be the thing to bring calm around you, I think as a leader, it makes you a very, very lazy leader because you begin to lean on that rather than having the finesse to be able to lead people and get people to buy in. So how do you do it, man? I don't know, man. I think that it's a trial and error. I think it's being able to see the fruit of moments where you said the wrong thing in the wrong way and seeing the fruit of it or how it affected your staff. I think it's times, man, when you could have been really strong on a thing and could have been really demeaning on a thing, and rightly so, because somebody was really acting out in a manner that wasn't proper. And you were able to control that situation calmly.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a confidence that comes from that, to be able to say, what I have to say is so compelling and it's so correct that even if I say it in this manner to you while you're going cuckoo, you're going to be able to receive it and hear the wisdom.
It will still be impactful.
Yeah. And when you get to that place, man, I think that it begins to help you lead people in a different way. But there's a couple of things I always say to men. You know, I think anger is lazy. In a leadership style. And I think that this other word, sarcasm, is not a leadership style. I think that it is
a language.
It's a language.
But it's not a leadership style.
It's okay, it's not a leadership style. And it will get you to a place, man. I think that we talk about masculinity. You know, this is renovating masculinity. I think that some people really perceive that this sarcasm somehow is strength. But for me, when I see people use sarcasm as a leadership style, I think it's about one of the weakest things that you can do.
Wow.
Because it's passive.
Yeah.
Rather than me saying and looking at you and being specific about what my problem is, I use sarcasm, and I could be joking. I couldn't be joking. Here's something. I'm not going to say it. I am going to say it. And when people begin to see that it's a habit of sarcasm, like, you want to piss off some leaders around you. You want to piss off your next level of leaders.
Yeah.
Just be a person that constantly relies on sarcasm to get your point across. Huh. Because nobody's buying into that anymore. They can all see that you're insecure about something.
Sniff it out. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it gives them power and authority over you, which you don't even believe.
Right.
But they get together and talk about it afterwards and go, man, all that sarcasm, he's covering up because he's insecure. He don't really, she doesn't really know, but they don't really know how to address this thing. So rather than that, they're going to kind of push it back and
dance
and
around
use some
it.
Sarcasm and, you know, think that it's funny. So
that's really good.
Yeah.
For me, it was the art of denial.
Mm.
Dallas Willard says this. It says, denial is the primary device that humans use to deal with their own wrongness.
Huh.
And so for me, it was, I'm not even going to address that because I'm not like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I perceive myself a different than what this person is perceiving me. And by the way, my ego tells me that I'm right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My pride tells me that you're wrong and I'm right. You just don't know really who I am because you've not taken the time to really learn who I am. And really, the fact of the matter is, I didn't take time to learn
who you are.
Yeah. And that's where I'm real big, and you both know, on personal growth plans. Because a personal growth plan is a mechanism to reveal who I am.
Yeah.
It's not that I'm reading to find out, you know, how can I get Anthony, you know, cornered because I'm going to learn how he leads and really. No, it's really all I need to grow in my leadership. So I need to become more aware of my blooper reels and my failures so that I can stop doing the things that keep me from achieving what I want.
Wow.
And so for me, it was just an absolute flat out denial.
Yeah.
That I'm not that way. Everybody else is wrong.
Man, those are such good big words. Sarcasm and anger and denial.
It's not just a river in Egypt, baby.
As leadership, as leadership, I think about the Hulk. Man, the Hulk has such enormous power. And the slightest little thing that ticks him off, man, he can tear up the whole city. But until the Hulk really understood his power and what his triggers were, like, he was just an out of control animal. And then he got to a place where he understood his power and his triggers. And then he became an asset and became one of the whatever the group is on Marvel's. But he became an intricate, helpful tool. And that's tool. I'm not calling him a tool. But
weapon.
Weapon. Bingo.
There you go.
And a lot of times, man, we don't understand the power and authority that we wield, even when we're not trying to. Like, a boss can walk into a room and the staff can be doing their deal and you can give a look like you're displeased that everybody didn't scatter like ants, and it causes a thing.
Yeah. Huh.
You can walk into your house. We talk a lot about leading and leadership and being bosses and all that kind of stuff, which boss is a bad word. You want to be a leader. Mm. A boss is positional.
Yeah, it is.
A leader is someone that people begin to follow because they respect what you do, how you do it, how you behave. But in the house, a lot of times we can take on the demeanor of a boss. Mm-hmm. And I remember that I was so ill-equipped with my son that I told you that I used threat. And we're talking about fails a little bit. I can track back to times, man, when then I was so frustrated with what my son had done. The only thing that I could do was reach and grab him and imply, if you don't stop, I'm going to freaking punch you.
Mm.
That's my son. Mm. Somebody that I love. Mm. And the only thing that I can do to get you to follow, because I'm such a poorly equipped leader, is to threaten you with bodily harm.
Yeah, physical dominance.
Grab them up, snatch them up. I'm bigger than you. And it's the same thing that we say about our lawyers and companies. You know, my lawyer is bigger than your lawyer. But man, I can just remember times in my household and then being able to step back and look at this person looking back at me, and literally they have fear in their eyes.
Do you think that's what the reason for that is? Because we don't equate fatherhood and leadership together.
Ooh.
So it's like I can be a leader at my business,
yeah,
but I'm a father in my home.
It's different. Yeah.
It's different. So then I fall back to how my dad was or wasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think that's a part of it? Because you would never, I would think, grab one of your employees.
Yeah, not yet.
Not yet. So for all of you out there, he's
it's available.
But you see what I'm saying? Do we as guys and men change that up? Because confession, I do. I'm sitting right here realizing
that
I'm more of a domineering kind of father, but yet I'm a empowering kind of leader.
Mm-hmm. Well.
Yeah, I agree, man. It's unfortunate, but the people that we love and care most about, I think some of that domineering and all that kind of stuff in our leadership style with them is birthed out of fear. Because staff members and people that work for companies, I mean, if there's a failure in leadership, they're going to go on and you're not really going to be responsible for them when they're 50.
Right. Yeah.
But at home, if there's failures and issues that come up and you don't address them, you still feel responsible for them when they're 50. And so you're working out of fear. So when I address things with my son, I'm going, man, this thing right here, dude, is going to ruin your life. And the only way that I'm going to shake it out of you is I'm going to grab you by your neck and tell you, you better not do it again.
More desperate.
Yeah. Do you understand what I'm telling you? It better go away right now. So that's the motive. It doesn't make it right. That's the motive of behaving that way, but it doesn't make it right. And it took me some years, man, to begin to even speak to my son and relate to my son in a manner that he could receive leadership because he's still shivering. He's still shivering from moments that I didn't behave like that or he saw me like that. And then it gets to a place where he didn't even want to tell me the truth because he was afraid that the Hulk might come out and behave in this way. So it was better. I trained him to lie to me. I trained the people that are under my authority to lie to me to survive. Mm. Oh man, this is right now, like that I'm just perceiving some of this. But and then that turns into its own problem. So I have another thing. Now I have a liar.
Mm.
But yet you are responsible degree. Again, we're not responsible for people's decisions,
yeah,
but we are responsible for the tools that we give them in order to make those decisions.
Yeah. I'm creating moments where that is the most economical way to survive it.
Yeah.
Is to lie to me. And I just think about all of that. And even with my daughter and my wife, man, moments that, you know, I tell you that I'm suspicious. And even looking in on my bride or looking in on my wife and going, if they behave in a way that's feminine, I think that it's controlling. So I'm going to stand up in this thing and begin to, you know, assert my authority in this and shut that down, because that's not going to sway me. What I'm talking about is the right thing for us to do. Mm. And I'm just telling you, man, if you have people around you that honestly love you and will give you feedback in moments of your sanity and you hear it, because one good thing about a leader, you have to be able to hear when people tell you that you've done things that created this feeling in them. Because it's not saying that you necessarily did something wrong. It could. But what it's saying is it made me feel this way.
Mm-hmm.
And so the leadership in my home, I'm constantly trying to evolve that, because I still, honestly, right now, I'll admit it on air, I don't know how to be a father. I don't know how to be a husband. I don't know how to be a leader of my house. I'm still stumbling through a lot of it. And by my faith and the grace of God, I'm learning things on mm-hmm. a daily basis and hanging out with JT and Chris. I learned how to be fathers and leaders and all this. But until I'm at a place, man, where I'm willing to say, I don't know.
Yeah.
And you talked about, you know, how to interact and toe that line of standing up. I'm always suspecting that I could be wrong.
Yeah.
Even when I know that I'm right, I'm always suspecting that I could be wrong in my house, in my wife, in my kids, in my relationships with my staff, with my leaders. No matter how certain I am that I'm right, I'm always leaving room that I could be wrong.
I wonder if we were just as suspicious about ourselves as we are of others.
Yeah. Mm,
come and on. How that would change
come on.
How we even walk in life. Let me be suspicious about my own motives before I'm suspicious about yours.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the person that we lie to the most in life is ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is just personal for me because I have lied to myself. And if you don't think that you've lied to yourself,
you're a liar.
You're lying to yourself right now. So we've all lied to ourselves. But Chris, this goes, you know, because I know that you, and this is the diversity part that I love, you've had a lot more bosses than you've had being a boss.
For sure. I'm rarely the one with the title or the position. Yeah.
So as you hear us talk, I mean, how does that reflect onto you and feelings that you've had toward people that were your boss at the time and as a person who was an employee, so to speak?
Right, right.
Top five boss fails. What do you think they are?
Oh, man. I think, yeah, the things that have jumped out to me, I think, are right in line with what y'all are saying, is that I get frustrated quickly when I see people in any type of position that is not seeing individuals. When you get that, like you said initially, Ant, was just that like blanket statement, not statement, but kind of a lens of,
yeah,
they're caught up on the outcome, maybe they're caught up on just the organization as a whole, maybe they're just caught up on financials. There are different ways it can come out. But when I start to see or sense or observe firsthand, like, you're not treating these people as people and individuals coming from different places. You're just sweeping through. And it's not always with anger. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it's just oblivious. So that kind of bows me up quick. And I think what I am always trying to chew on, and I'm always taking notes of what people do that I like and things that I don't like, you know.
I'm never going to do that.
I'm always
that's acknowledging. It's an intellectual self over here.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of that is because I'm never the one dictating and calling the shot. So I'm feeling the impacts a lot too. So it's not always just because I'm really taking time. It's like, I'm wrestling with the emotions of, I'm so frustrated that you keep doing this to all these people that work for you, or I'm so mad that you're missing that. So I'm almost forced to do it a lot of just kind of to take inventory of what I'm observing or feeling. And then I go internal with it and figure out what would I do different or how can I help? But that, I think that was what, when my wife asked me that question about, do you think you have a problem with authority? I think that's how she said it. I don't think she said it, why do you have a, but it was like, do you have a problem with authority? Or it's a lot of that. What I've unearthed, the more I chew on that for years now, is I'm never chasing other people's positions. I'm never trying to usurp them or trying to prove that I can do better, nor am I trying to chase a promotion. Rarely. It's not because I'm holier. I'm just like, that's not a gut thing that I'm pursuing and chasing. Right. But when so I'm kind of like, in some ways, I can be a really great employee for someone, because if you are doing something stupid, I'm going to try to step in and, on behalf of the people you're hurting, I'm going to try to do it better behind the scenes without anyone, or I'm going to come alongside and try to help smooth that over, not for the sake of taking position, but for the sake of the good of the group and the good of the team.
Yeah.
I'm way more concerned with that. But at the same time, I am not respecting you in your position. So I'm not going to try to take you out. However, I'm also not necessarily following you and trusting your gut ever. You know, so that's the wrestle I can at least acknowledge, not necessarily always do it well, but I'm real quick to be like, I'm not okay with that. However, I will be respectful to your face and I will fall in line. And but then as soon as you walk out, I'm going to sweep through and try to make better for everybody else's sake. And because I'm annoyed, that's going to drive me to try to do all this nice or good or helpful things. It's not always with the best intention. Sometimes that's just where it gets squirmy, you know, like in some ways it can seem and look good or it can sound good or sound like I'm honorable. In other ways, I'm like almost sticking it to the man, sticking it to the leader behind their back just to prove that I can do something that the organization needs. And you still have no idea, you know.
Think about it as a leader, man. It just made me think of something when you say that. The whole idea of tax-free weekend. They say that the reason why that's so impactful for people, like if you had a sale and said 10% off, like nobody would even stop. But the fact that it says tax-free weekend, they feel like they are sticking it to the man.
Mm.
They're keeping something that the man would be taking from them. And think about that mentality as a leader, that when people are constantly feeling pushed or suppressed in some way, that any small, minute way that they can stick it to the man, they'll take it.
Mm.
And then even the way you restated that question, Chris, that is communication 101. Not why do you have a problem with authority, but
do you think
you have a problem with authority? Because that's one of the coolest ways to get people to correct themselves. Mm. You don't have to correct them. You ask them a question, and if they're honest with themselves, even if they don't have the ability to be honest at that moment, as a leader, you pose questions to get them to think.
Think about it. Yeah.
And then they become different because they had an opportunity to think about it and not be in a situation where they felt like they had to defend it.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that's a good question to end on. The same thing that he'll ask you is like, do you have a problem with authority? Because here's the issue with that. We all do to some degree in some form or fashion.
For some reason, right.
For some reason. And if you do, it actually gives people the credibility to have a problem with you.
Mm-hmm.
So that is constantly, you're talking about a constant thought. That is a constant thought with me. Am I giving people credibility to treat me a certain way because I'm doing that?
Yeah.
And I don't like it. So why would I do it?
Mm.
So I would take inventory, assess self-awareness of where are the areas in my life that I have a problem with authority? Why do I have that problem? Is it because of ego? Is it because of a wound? Is it because I just don't like that guy? Whatever the reason is, and just keep in the back of your mind, whatever that reason is, you give credibility to someone else to have that problem with you in the same way.
Yeah.
And nobody likes that. So listen, next, I've been thinking this whole time, the next episode, I'm going to bring up something that every freaking man deals with and they don't like it. They don't, man. And it's not even gonna like talking about it. But,
yeah.
But I do think it's necessary as we're renovating ourselves that we gotta get to the core of some of these things. So I'm rebuking myself as I'm thinking about it. So
yeah.
Anyway, well, I'm gonna keep my eyes closed this time and not look at Anthony.
I'll take what I can get.
We're just men under renovation.
Renovating Masculinity is hosted by Chris Terrell, Anthony Flemons, and JT McCraw. Produced and edited by John Fender, Ben Delameter, and Jonas Litton at Lasting Media. If you want to get your hands dirty rethinking, removing, and replacing habits that keep us from becoming renovated men, join our highly engaged private Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/renovatingmasculinity. You can also find us online at renovatingmasculinity.com and on socials at renovatingmasculinity.